It is my distinct pleasure at this time to introduce our two speakers. The first one will be Alexis M. Herman, Director, Women's Bureau, U.S. Department of Labor. And I'll read some background information on her. Alexis Herman is the youngest director in the history of the 57-year-old Women's Bureau, the oldest of the federal labor-related efforts to promote the welfare of women. She was appointed to this post by President Carter in March this year, 1977. There are a lot of things here about Alexis, but I'm not going to read it all because I want her to tell you some of the things. We know what the Women's Bureau was created for, and that is the responsibility for formulating standards and policies to promote the welfare of working women and to advance their employment opportunities. Some other information on Alexis Herman is that she developed the model for the program called Black Women Employment Program under the auspices of the Southern Regional Council in 1972. The program helped minority women in 10 cities across the country to enter white-collar positions in private industry and operated in 5 other cities to widen apprenticeship opportunities for women and to help move them into blue-collar jobs. Ms. Herman was an Alabama delegate to the White House Conference on Youth in 1971 and received the Outstanding Young Persons Award in Atlanta in 1974. She is a member of the World Peace Commission, the United States Catholic Conference on Social Justice, the boards of directors of the YWCA and the U.S. Youth Council. She is a graduate of Xavier University in New Orleans. Ms. Herman did graduate work in guidance and counseling at the University of Southern Alabama. She has written and lectured in numerous colleges and universities and community organizations on the employment problems of women. Alexis?
Thank you, Ophir, for your introduction. I must say that among all of the caucuses that were going on last evening, Jane and I caucused last night, and we thought that since the groups were running so small and most folk were interested in really getting back into the plenary sessions, that in the interest of time and to accommodate Jane's schedule, that we would share our time at the podium today and to take just a few moments each to introduce to you our specific areas of concern within the administration and to really have more or less an informal kind of discussion this morning to throw open the session for really questions and answers from the audience, so that in the interest of time, we might have an opportunity to really hear from you what your concerns were, what your concerns are for both of us from our respective positions. So let me, having said that, briefly introduce to you the Women's Bureau, how I see it particularly from my perspective as the new director of the Bureau, and hopefully some of the challenges that confront us and what we are trying to do in the Department of Labor currently to address some of those issues. Osceola mentioned to you that most of you probably know something about the Women's Bureau. It does have a very broad mandate, and that is to say that the Bureau, which was chartered by Congress back in 1920, has the responsibility for the formulation of standards and policies that will affect to have an impact on advancing and enhancing the status of working women in our country today. The Bureau is 57 years old, and it is, of course, the oldest of our federally related efforts to service women. Now, I'm quick to always say, after having babbled off the policy mandate of the Bureau, how that really translates itself out into a practical kind of day-to-day application is really a different kind of story. Because what the Bureau tries to do is to really work with each assistant secretary within the Labor Department across the board to examine the programs, to examine the policies, and to make recommendations, really, for how they will affect women to the betterment. I think it's important to point out from an overall perspective, some of you may or may not know, that for the last 10 years, the Women's Bureau has been a part of the Employment Standards Administration within the Labor Department. That is the area within the department that has the responsibility for all of our programs that have to do with protective measures for workers, such as the question of equal pay for equal work, the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, the Wage and Hour Division, which administers the minimum wage law, are all housed in the Employment Standards Administration, and so has the Bureau since the early 1960s. The Bureau was originally a part of the Secretary's office, and on the, 26th of October or 21st of October, Secretary Marshall made a decision to return the Bureau to his office effective January 1st. Now, we think that is a very significant and important step for the Bureau, because what this says actually is that the Bureau will actually have an opportunity for the first time in many, many years to re-involve itself in the direct policy and program formulation of the department and to speak with the direct support and the direct authority of the Secretary. Now, when you consider that within the Labor Department, we have the Employment and Training Administration, which administers all of our employment programs, such as CETA, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. It administers unemployment compensation, the employment service, the new youth bill that recently passed on the Hill. All of these programs are part of the Employment and Training Administration. We also have the Employment and Standards Administration, which I just referenced, which is the current house of the Bureau. We have what's known as LMSA, Labor Management Relations, in the department, and this is the arm of the department that is really responsible for all of the labor negotiations. We have been heavily involved, and I'm not even up to date in the news on the dock worker strike. We had resolved that as of Wednesday. Negotiations broke down Friday, and I don't know where we are currently. Maybe someone in the audience has seen the paper this morning, but that's an example of the involvement of the LMSA division within the Labor Department. And of course, we have ASPR, which is our policy and planning arm of the department itself for policies and programs. That department most recently has been very actively involved in the welfare reform proposals that the Carter administration is proposing along with HEW. Now, I give you an example of the various areas in the department to give you a feel for the cross-cutting responsibilities that the Women's Bureau actually has in relationship to each of these areas. And I should also mention OSHA, because that's very important, and I think it's something that we tend to forget as a part of trying to focus in on women's issues. And OSHA is the agency that has to do with occupational safety and health standards, and that's a very critical agency within the department. With our new position within the Office of the Secretary, we will have an opportunity, as we should, as a part of our mandate, to really interface with each of these agencies to examine the kinds of programs and to examine the kinds of policies that we're currently developing, that we're currently formulating. And I'm not going to take the time now to outline specifically what some of those concerns are in each of those areas. I think maybe those are some of the kinds of details that we will have an opportunity to get into as a part of our questions and answers. But I say that to say that one of my first concerns and perhaps my first priority in coming into the Bureau was the recognition that the Bureau needed the elevation in status to really have an opportunity to be able to affect policy decisions in each of those areas. And I think that in recent months, we've had an opportunity to do that. You may have been aware of the new regulations that the department just issued, for instance, on women in construction and women in apprenticeship. These were two joint efforts that we worked with the Employment and Training Administration on, specifically with the Bureau of Apprenticeship Training, to issue for the first time goals and timetables for women in apprenticeship. We did the same thing with the Office of Federal Contract Compliance to call for an affirmative action program for women in the construction industry. This was also a first, and I highlight these two issues specifically because I think it's important for you to know that we went to the Federal Register for proposed comments on both of these issues in the months of September and October, respectively. The comment period has closed for the goals and timetables on women in construction, and we came out with a 50-50 balance. That's to say that we had approximately 50% of the comments that came in were pro and approximately 50% were con. Now, on the apprenticeship question, those regulations are open in the Federal Register until the 30th of November. And I think it's important for you to know that in light of the resolution that we passed yesterday on the Employment Committee, that the comments are actually running 2-1 against an affirmative action program for women in apprenticeship. And we have brought with us this morning copies of those regulations and the address of the person that you need to be in contact with directly and immediately to say that you endorse this action by the department. And I need not say to this audience that in light of the climate that we are experiencing in this country today, with the whole attitude in the civil rights area that somehow women and minorities have now had their day in the sun, I think is really being demonstrated to the very organized effort that we see in the department currently from outside groups who have taken opposition against this action. It's my personal feeling that because for so many years, so much energy went into the issue of asking for an affirmative action program for women in the construction industry and women in apprenticeship, not only in terms of the symbolic posture that this creates for women in the workforce, but because of the very real issues that were involved, that it takes affirmative measures and it takes the legal support and the legal undergirding to really bridge the gap when we talk about the earnings differential and we talk about the need to employ women in non-traditional jobs, that you simply cannot do it with the legal support. And getting to the point of making that decision finally, and it took us 7 years to get to this point, we've almost relaxed now and said, well, we've got it, but we don't really have it. We have it in the Federal Register, and we need your support, and we need your comments on that right away. And I would just sort of underscore that. I sort of got off on that a little bit. But that's a very significant policy involvement from our perspective that I think the Bureau has made a difference in recent months. And I'm hopeful that similar kinds of actions and working very closely right now with ETA and the CETA officials there will also produce other kinds of similar measures to close the gaps and to try to eliminate the discriminatory kinds of barriers that we're all conscious of that do exist. To that end, we are also proposing for the new CETA rewrites an affirmative action program that will be attached to local prime sponsors as a part of their CETA initiatives to ensure not only quantitative participation on the part of women, but also qualitative participation. Because I think one of the things that we lack now is that we have so many statistics in the government. I mean, we really have data on everything in one sense, but we don't really have enough qualitative data. And I think there's a recognition, particularly on the part of this administration, that in order to evaluate the kind of program impact that we have had, and in order to make a more intelligent determination as to the kinds of programs that we will need in the future to still address social ills and economic ills that have not been corrected, we will have to have more qualitative data to examine the nature of the impact. And we can only say right now, for instance, that in certain CETA programs we may have 20% participation or we may have 30% participation, but we can't necessarily tell you the nature of that participation. And that's the kind of issue that we need to be dealing with as well. And I think there is a recognition to move on these kinds of questions at the same time that we are concerned with an inclusionary process of simply increasing our participation rates. I want to depart just a bit from the policy involvement, because that really is a somewhat of a new thrust for us to be able to really take some hard issues internally in the department and to move them. The Bureau really has an advocacy responsibility in that sense. But I also believe that the Bureau has a responsibility to be a kind of a prophet, if you will, and I say that for want of a better word,